Hey everyone, it's the 40th anniversary of This is Spinal Tap. Clearly I should have posted this on the 2nd, but hey, I'm not that far off. It's still in March. So with that said, we decided to repost our revisit of This is Spinal Tap. Oh, and beside the 40th anniversary, there's some amazing tap news to recently hit. Derek Smalls, Nigel Tufnel, and David St. Hubbins will return with a Spinal Tap sequel. It actually started filming last month. Rob Reiner did say Spinal Tap 2 will feature Paul McCartney and Elton John. And it would be funny to see them interact with Paul McCartney and Elton John, but I truly want to see them interacting with some big rock artists. Like, obviously, I know probably Dave Grohl is going to be in it, maybe Ozzy Osbourne. But I mean, seriously, because when it comes to this film, I remember watching the segment from I Love the 80s where they talk about this movie, and there's a bunch of rock artists who just like love and worship this film, and how one of them in the segment mentioned how like every tour bus had this movie, and how things that would happen in the movie, and when like something went wrong on tour, they would say they're having a Spinal Tap moment. So like, I truly hope that they feature a lot of rock artists in this film. And I honestly don't know if it's going to streaming or it'll be in theaters, but I just know that if it's in theaters, this is one movie I have to go see in theaters. Also, I just want to add that if you've never had the DVD of this, like seriously, it's worth owning. To me, it's one of the best DVDs out there. And I'm not talking about like the film itself. Yeah, the movie's great, but the DVD experience is amazing, because the moment you put it in and you push play, there's a black screen that pops up before the title, and it says like chapters, play, whatever, scene selection, blah, blah, blah. All of that, you hear, now, it's not the actor, it's not Harry Shearer, Christopher Guest, or Michael McKean. No, they're the characters, they're Derek, Nigel, and David, as their character, they're narrating what's happening on screen. And from that point, it's freaking hilarious. And then the audio commentary isn't like the typical the director talking. No, it's them in character basically watching their documentary, and it's so awesome. Like, DVDs back when used to be amazing. They would put so much into these fucking DVDs, made it worth it. All right, well, anyways, let's fire up those time circuits, set it to 1984, because today we're traveling back in time to revisit This is Spinal Tap, the 40th anniversary special.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of 88 Miles Per Hour Podcast. I am your host Santos, and as always, I am joined by
Freddy Morales. ¿Cómo están todos? Ahua.
Ahua it is. I don't know. I was trying to do a mixture of what's his name? God damn it. Yeah, Al Pacino, Scarface.
But you know, Ahua.
Yeah, hua.
The Al Pacino, yeah. Ahua.
Hua.
It's all about hua.
Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode. And we are finishing off our series of 1984 films. It wasn't planned. It was actually done by accident, because the first film we did, or first two films, were both in 1984. And I thought some graffiti picture that Freddie also thought was 1984. And we just decided, let's do 1984, in which it said 87. So maybe we'll do 87 at some point.
Yeah, that's when we're coming out of that whole last year. And, you know, we're all pendejos.
Yeah. But we're ending it. This is our final film. And this film was actually voted upon by our fans. I put it out there from Instagram. I did it on Facebook. I did it, you know, I put it out there on the stories. And it all came down to like a tie. It was just waiting, like, holy hell, we have one. Like, it's just like
what am I going to do? It was a tie. And finally, at the end of it, someone voted one extra one on This Is Spinal Tap. So that's how we're going to end this with. We did Prince last week, and it was like a whole musical film. So why not jump over and do a mockumentary? And this time we'll be doing it with Spinal Tap.
Yeah. That year was such a good year for movies, especially this one coming out too as well. A lot of, well, this was one of the mockumentary.
No,
mockumentaries. I'm sorry, I got tongue twisted there.
It's your accent. That's why there's certain words I can't say con el accent.
Well, you know, it's a rockumentary, you know. Yeah, that's what you call it, you know. So, you know, it's about British guys, American guys being British, and then, yeah, something like that.
Real quick, when people meet you, like in the press or media, when they're going to interview you, because you are doing Devotional Dave, and if, say, they don't know your last name yet, they don't know your name, and because you basically look almost like Dave Gahan, do they think you're British ever at any point?
Some that don't know Depeche Mode, some of them do. Some of them, yeah. I remember I did a show and someone thought I was Dave. I was like, no. I'm like, oh, I was, he was like totally, of course, you know, he had a lot of drink. And he came up to me and goes, I was there, man, 84, dude. Oh my God, Dave, what are you doing over here in Austin? Like, I was just hanging out here, bro. You know, I just, you know, I go to different countries and I just say, hey, let's just do a show here.
You're like, hey, you're not soy. I don't know. Soy Freddy.
Yeah. No, but it's funny, dude. It is funny when people do that. It just trips me out. It trips me out. And I'm like, okay. Sometimes I go with the flow just to kind of make it, you know, humorous for me too as well. But
yeah. Well, it's funny that, because I was just like, oh, you know, because someone put your face on a Dave Gahan like image from Barrel of a Gun, and it freaking was shockingly, eerily like good. Because
it looks cool. Yeah, it kind of looks. Yeah, it's kind of, well, you know, it's like we have the kind of same body shape, so it kind of, it's easy for me to morph into Dave. But but it's not about Dave Gahan. It's about a Spinal Tap. People are going,
it's about Spinal Tap.
I don't want to be talking about this.
But yeah. So what? This is here. This film. Honestly, look. All right. One of the comments says from, I don't know how to pronounce what the person's name, asking first function. I don't know, but he says Spinal Tap deserves much more recognition. He's like, you can help, guys. So that was one of the votes, basically telling us that it deserves a lot, because this movie, honestly, it just, you know, it made money in the box office, and it became a huge cult film once it was released on VHS and Betamax. But this movie was like, when you look at the reviews from, like, especially back when you got, like, you know, Roger Ebert, Gene Siskel, like, you got all these people talking about, hell, even the Library of Congress has put this in the National Film Registry. So that means that this movie is saved for, let's see, in 2002, This Is Spinal Tap was deemed culturally, historically, or anesthetically significant by the Library of Congress, and was selected for preservation in the United States Film National Film Registry. So it's one of those where, like, this thing is going to be put in a vault and saved for future generations to be like, oh, like, you know, if things ever get lost and all that, they're going to take all this stuff out and be like, here you go. And this is one of those films, because it's just widely regarded as one of the best films of 1984, and it's certified fresh. So this, you know, if you follow, I don't like Rotten Tomatoes, but if you follow Rotten Tomatoes, it's up there at a 95%. So this
I was surprised to, because I saw this a long time ago, and, you know, it's me being a musician, it's hilarious, because everything that that you see in this movie, it's pretty much what happens being in the band.
Especially
when you're an aging band too as well, and you're trying to come back, and you're trying to deal with the managers or record labels. And for Spinal Tap, I mean, it's just hilarious. It's a very comedy. I was laughing a lot today while revisiting this in the morning. So it's fresh in my mind. And a lot of special guests, actors who are in this film, that are like, oh my God, that guy's in it. You know, some British actors.
So let's start off with who's in it, you know, like with this film. Yeah, so right away, Meathead, director from All in the Family, Mr. Rob Reiner, who also did Stand By Me. This guy, he was the actual director of this. Actually, this is his first film that he directed, but he also stars in the movie. He's Marty DeBerge. So that's, you know, you also have the writers and the band. So you got Michael McKean, who's David St. Hubbins. He's currently on, or actually he just passed away on Better Call Saul. He was Saul's brother, spoilers. Nigel Tuffle, who's Christopher Guest, who also from after this film, who wrote this, was one of the writers, has made a bunch of mockumentary films. So there's like Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, what were the other ones? Waiting for Guffman, Mascots. All these films are done in the style of this movie. And then Harry Shearer, who's one of the prolific voices in The Simpsons, who does Derek Smalls. He's the one that has the in his pants. What is that? The cucumber.
Yes. That was a funny scene, by the way, when he's walking in the airport. So when you see that scene, it's hilarious.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, and then you got little, you know, cameos through like Ed Begley Jr. You see a young Dana Carvey,
Fran Drescher.
Yeah. Fran Drescher.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have also one of the, I didn't see at all in the movie, but Angelica Houston is credited in this film. I didn't see her. So maybe she was cut out. But this film is basically, it's a mockumentary. What it is supposed to be a rockumentary. So it's a mock documentary where they follow a band around, and it's just them. They're releasing a new album and they're going around trying to do press and to promote the album with the concerts and tour to, you know, Freddie. That's why I was excited to do this movie, because I'm doing this movie with someone who is a musician, someone who's been in a band, like not just in this current band, but in the past he was in another band that, like, in 2001, I remember you posted a picture that I had to share because Freddie's all young, you know, he's a little kid.
Yeah,
you know?
Damn, man. Qué viejo ya estoy yo.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, you know, I want to, you know, be good to get some insight of someone who's been on the road. This film is widely loved by musicians. There's a segment on I Love the 80s when they talk about this for 84, and there's all these musicians who just talk about how this movie is one of those that everybody has on their tour bus. All these rock bands have this movie on their
tour bus. You got to have it in your collection. It has to.
It's funny that where a lot of these are like Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, you know, Dee Snider, Ozzy Osbourne, they've all talked about how they've gotten lost backstage, you know.
Oh man, I've gotten lost backstage several times, bro. And when I saw that, I was laughing. And you're like, you know, you're like trying to follow the noise of the audience, but sometimes, you know, you're playing at 15,000 seaters, you know, you got block walls that are, you know, and hear the sound. So you're like, where? And then you're like, hey, it's over there. Hey, and there's a guy in the background, you know, it's backstage helping you, putting a pipe on. ¿Dónde está el stage? Oh, pues el stage, mira, allá por allá. Luego estás un left, un right. Y luego arriba, and then you're right there, okay?
Oh, dude, and then hilarious. You walk around like, all right, yeah, you know, California, right, or whatever, Los Angeles. And then you walk back and he's like, hey, otra vez, te dije, go that way.
That's happened, dude. That's hilarious. I like it. I like in the beginning of the film when it starts.
Yeah.
When they're like arriving and you see the limousine guy, like the guy who's going to pick him up with the name of the wrong, with, you know, with the misspelling misspelling of the band. Spinal Tap.
Yeah. It's like it's the beginning of like just the problems, like of this band, and it's like I don't understand why, but they have a curse with their drummers. Every single drummer.
Let me tell you, every band has a curse with the drummer. It's always the drummers, bro.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It's just something about the drummers. You know how many times I've gone through drummers in my own bands? Like something happens. We have a good time 6 months and something happens. Like, dude, what happened? Oh, dude, I got to go. What happened? What do you mean you got to go? I got to sell my drums. What? I got to make rent. You're going to sell your... What is going on?
Wow. Holy crap.
Stuff like that, dude.
So, well, at least they don't die because
I haven't had one die on me yet, but I've had one to, like, tell me some. But yeah, unfortunately,
because they're all drummers. They die by, like, spontaneous combustion.
One died gardening.
Gardening accident.
How do you do that? Choking
on someone else's vomit?
Exactly.
That was he was out there with the lawnmower and he tripped and he fell and he ran him over. I don't know.
That's embarrassing, dude. Yeah, that could happen, dude. That could happen, you know, especially with a machinery like that, you know.
No lie, my neighbor, when I was a kid, she was an older lady. Died freaking on her yard outside. What? My understanding, what I remember is that they kind of had a hole in the middle of their yard for some reason. Maybe it had like a sprinkler system back when. And she fell in it, like her foot. It wasn't deep, but her foot fell and it made her fall. And I'm saying that's she died after, like, I guess because old people can fall and hurt themselves bad and die from the fall. So,
hey, bro, you can walk out of your house and have an accident. That's so just like how trip over a kid's toy, your kid's toy, and you can fall in your face and die right there.
That's
it can happen. So it can happen anywhere, man. But for Spinal Tap,
that's true. Or spontaneously combust. That would be my thing. But I love, because when you're introduced to this band, it starts off with an interview. And I love that they mentioned that they're like, oh yeah, when we first started, we call ourselves The Originals.
Oh.
But we found out there's another band called The New Originals. No. So we called ourselves The Regulars. But then they decided to change their name, the other band. So they're like, should we just be called, do we go back to The Originals? Or, you know, it's just like just some dumb, like, and here's the thing about this movie, Freddie. I don't know if you know this, and when it comes to these films, that's why, like, I love this show called Curb Your Enthusiasm by Larry David, because that show, it's all improvised. Like, they have outlines, and that's what they did with this movie. They have outlines, and what it is like this. So it's kind of like, you know, like the way we do this show, Freddie, you know, you and I are going to talk about This Is Spinal Tap. Other than that, we don't have, you know, what we're going to say. We're just going off of what we're saying, right? Well, with their comedy, that's what this movie was. So they know, okay, we have an outline. So we know what we're supposed to talk about, being like, okay, you're going to talk about the album release and where your character is supposed to go. Other than that, all the line is improvised. So all the comedy is improvised, and almost all the takes they used were the first takes because they wanted their natural reaction. So whenever you see one of them kind of laugh a bit or anything, it's because they're truly laughing. Like, it's making them laugh. But yeah, it's all improvised. So this movie, I like that is not one scripted part.
There's so many parts, bro. I like it when I can't think of his name right now, but he's backstage and he's complaining to his manager that the bread is too small.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's Nigel Tuffel. He's to his Nigel, manager, yes. Ian.
Yes, to the manager, Ian. And that was hilarious, bro, because when you think you're like,
turn around.
Yeah, dude, that's the part right there, dude. That is, I'm so fortunate that we had cheese and water and Gatorades in our green room, bro. And this guy's complaining about the bread, bro.
He's like, how am I going to fold the put it like this?
How am I going to do this, you know? How am I supposed to pick it up, you know, and eat it, you know? It's like, what was the bread? Bread needs to be bigger. Some manager.
Well, no, there's some problems here. I don't even know where to start. All right, this...
Sound check?
Look, there's a little problem with the... this miniature bread. It's like, I've been working with this now for about half an hour, and I can't figure out, let's say I want... Mm-hmm. A bite, right? You got this.
You'd like bigger bread?
Exactly. I don't understand how.
You could,
it's
fold
like
a, this then. I mean, you could,
well,
fold
no,
it.
Then it's half the size.
No, not the bread. No, you could fold the meat.
Think, yeah, but this, then it breaks up. Breaks
no,
apart
no, no, no,
like
you
this.
Put it on the bread like this, see?
But then if then you keep folding it, it keeps breaking.
Why would you keep
and then
you'll, it?
Everything has to be folded. And then it's this, and I don't want this. I want large bread so that I can put this.
Right.
So then it's like this, but this doesn't work because then it's all...
Because it hangs out like that.
Look,
yeah.
Would you be holding
this?
No,
I wouldn't want to eat. I wouldn't want to put that in my mouth.
All right, A, exhibit, no, you're right. You're exhibit A, and right, then we move right on to this. Look, who's in here? No one. And then in here,
there's a little guy. Look.
Yeah.
So it's a complete catastrophe.
No, you're right, Nigel. But I mean, calm down.
Look, it's not a big deal.
I'm
look,
sorry.
It's a joke.
You know,
it's really.
It's just some crack at university, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
right,
really.
It's all.
I don't want it to affect your performance.
It's not
right.
going to affect my
right.
performance. Don't
That's
worry about it. All right.
Okay.
Just hate it, really. It does
well, it
disturb me,
again.
But I
it's
rise
disgusting.
Above it. I'm a professional,
You're right?
And I love the manager because the manager deals with a bunch of shit, dude.
Seriously. Yeah,
you know, we luckily. I mean, I've had managers and they go through a lot because they baby the bands. You know, they're like
they do.
They're
like their album cover that they need to promote. It's called "Smell the Glove," and when the like the record. I don't know who was it? Fran Drescher. She's
Fran Drescher,
with
yeah,
the
she's,
company.
Yeah, she's like the art director or kind of like the middle person within the record label.
With like the head guy. And then
yeah.
she like flat out tells him, pulls him aside.
Yeah,
like,
I love it.
What the hell is this album? We can't do this. And
it's sexist.
It's a woman on all floors. So she's basically like a dog, has a collar around her, and someone's putting a glove in her face, and the album's called Smell That Glove. Like, what the fuck?
Right. And she's telling him, and he's like, What? I don't find it offensive. It's sexy. No, it's sexist.
Yeah.
Sexist. Oh. No, it's, I thought it was sexy, you know?
Yeah. Cause that's when they walk over to the band, and it's again Nigel. He's like, what's wrong with being sexy? He's like, no, sexist.
You know, but seriously, the front cover is everything for a label. I mean, I worked at two major labels, you guys, and
yeah.
I would hear these conversations in our meeting rooms when the manager, the band, or over, you know, just talking about the front cover. I mean, when a band is under a label, you have so many hands on that record. Everybody wants to put their input, the art director, the manager, the label, the band member. It's a pain in the butt to release the album, you guys.
God and damn.
You see the stress? I mean, it's funny because I can relate. I can see this happen. It was like, it can be something like that. You know, it's like, dude,
and you know,
they don't see it like, dude, it's very offensive or it's racist. No, but I don't care, man. It's art, you know?
And what's crazy is that it almost like foretells what happened, especially like later on with like Walmart and Kmart and all of those stores, because they either one would not carry the album, or two, they had to have an alternative like cover, or the it was a clean album.
Yes. You know what? And I dealt with that a lot. We had to make stickers because I worked for MCA Records. It was a hip hop station. I mean, a hip hop album, a hip hop label. And that was the thing. We had, you know, you had Kmart, you had all these big shops, Target. And they were like, no, that front cover is too sexist. You know, you got to slap a big, you know, sticker in front of it and cover whatever it is. And yeah, dude, it's just.
So you worked for the, like a hip hop label and all of that?
MCA Records. Yeah.
And you didn't even know Mr. Notorious Big?
No, I was so.
That was funny though.
That was
sorry.
Notorious. Mira, sé que no se canta Notorious Big.
Notorious, come on.
I know, dude.
But you know what's cool? Because it's funny, but then it's like it's real almost, because and he's like, oh, we got the album. Hey, everybody, come here. We're gonna show you the album, and it's all black. He's like, what can be more black than black? You know, and it's a black album, and it's funny because Metallica has an album called The Black Album, in which they actually purposely did it black in tribute to Spinal Tap, because in they have an
nice.
it's captured
nice.
In their DVD where they have a DVD, it's called A Year and a Half in the Life of Metallica, and it says in backstage during a Freddie Mercury tribute concert, Metallica met with Spinal Tap and they discussed how their Black Album was an homage to you know, Spinal Tap, Smell the Glove.
Dude, I think a lot of bands did homage to this. I mean, I can see the homage because there's so many funny things here. Like they did, I work with the band Sigur Rós, if you guys are really cool.
Ooh, Sigur Rós? Kind of, yeah, yes. Dude, they're great, man.
Dude, they came up with a white album, and it was a white album. You can see their logo, but it was like, you couldn't even see it. So everybody was like, and they were like, no, we wanted to be white. That's what we want. And art director, it was in that label, was like, no, we need to have like the band, but no, this band, you know, this band plays backwards. I mean, like not facing the audience. They because they want you to focus just on the music. So yeah, I mean, a lot of bands have done homage to this. It's like, oh, I just want a white album, man. Wouldn't it be cool, dude?
And solid that's white. Funny because Ian says, like, hey, you know, the White Album. He tries to compare, like, look at the Beatles. They did a White Album. Nobody cared about the album. It was about the music, you know, because he tries to, like, they're upset. And it's like, there's one scene that it's funny, but it also makes me feel bad is when, okay, they get a lot of cancellations. Almost every venue, they're like, oh, the show was canceled. The show was canceled for low ticket sales. Like, yeah,
no attendance. And these are not 10,000-15,000 seaters. These are 2,000-1,500 seaters.
Yeah, and they get canceled. And then they go to a record store signing and no one is there. Ooh, no one.
Yeah, that's
and
sad.
I'm like, oh man, that's fucking embarrassing.
But you know what? Prop to the guy who actually put that together. It must have been the A&R guy or the marketing guy for the band. Because he's like, dude, I'm sorry. I know it sucks. He even said, damn, that sucks. Imagine you're there to promote them. That's the most scary thing, especially when you're doing your original music. I mean, I've done record release parties and you're like, damn, man, I hope people show up. I mean, this is it. This is if it's, I'm either hot or I'm not, or the music sucks. And that's when you know people are not interested in you. And it sucks for them because nobody shows up. And then this guy's like, yeah, man, just go ahead, man. Just kick my ass. Look, here's my ass. Kick my ass.
Yeah, he's like, literally, come on, guys. It's my fault. Just kick my ass.
Yeah, just.
You know what I want you to do? Will you do something for me?
What?
Do me a favor. Just kick my ass, okay? Kick this ass for a man, that's all. Kick my ass. Enjoy. Come on. I'm not asking, I'm telling with this. Kick my ass.
Because he took the fault that no one showed up. You know, it's funny because it's like I hear this and it's like, what happened to all the radio promotion? All of that. Well, you know, I know they said that and they didn't come through. It's just typical music industry stuff, dude. That really does happen.
Oh man, I swear. And it's just like, it's funny because they always have like these little, like, there's even like little bit things that that are funny, like you catch, like even something that, like, I remember, like, when I first saw this movie, like, see, oh, we didn't talk about like how we were first introduced to this movie. And I guess the reason why I skipped that part, because like, this wasn't one I watched when I was a kid. Like, the way I was introduced to this movie was in the late 90s. When DVDs, or maybe it was like early 2000, I think it was late 90s. DVD players, they were releasing a special edition for the first time ever. This is Spinal Tap on DVD. And it was going to be in an ultra like special collector's edition with all these special features. And one of the greatest things about this freaking DVD is the commentary track. And here is why. Because you have Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Harry Shearer doing the commentary. But they are not doing the commentary as actors being like, oh yeah, see, in this scene, I was focused on acting this way. No. The whole DVD is done as their characters. So Spinal Tap is watching the movie and giving you the commentary as Spinal Tap, and it's effing amazing. If you can get your hands on the DVD commentary, like, they do have the opening menu on YouTube. You could watch the menu part and you could hear their commentary for that part. But
ooh, black,
very black,
always black, a good black choice.
It's like space without the stars, isn't it?
Oh, that's beautiful. That's poetry, that is.
Very restful, isn't it?
Restful on the eyes. It's like a pastel black.
It's a great way to tune up your set, you know.
Yeah, black to make sure there's no interference.
Oh, it's a basic.
It's like an airplane going over your head.
No, hello.
Oh, that's great.
I recognize it.
Nice. Stop. No, it's getting too small.
Wait, blow it up. Blow it up.
Where'd it go?
No, I'm going to freeze it. It's still there, but it's rather small. Well, you've got to get very close to the set.
Run it back. Make it big again.
If you've got high definition, then you'll die. You're too close to the screen.
What are those buttons on the bottom there?
Play.
Well, it says play. That's obvious. You can play
Wait, are we supposed to
bloody
play?
Movie. No,
I didn't
no.
even bring my bass.
No, not play music. Oh, no, play the actual
scene selection.
Well, that means you can go to any scene you'd like. I mean, it's like a list. You get a menu.
From what? Scenes from what?
From the film. This is Spinal Tap. Well, that's what we're here for.
If you've seen it, why would you want to select it?
Didn't you know that's what we were doing here?
Well, no, I just showed up, didn't I?
And then it says special features, which I'm assuming is like, you know, my profile.
Your mole.
Right, Derek's but what if package.
You like, what if you like to see a mystery or something? Then what you do?
You buy another DVD.
Oh.
Yeah, your choices aren't unlimited.
You can't get another film scene selection from this?
No.
Not unless you turn on the TV.
Is there going to be some other graphics going on here?
No.
Shouldn't the name sort of rotate and look like it's aluminium and have lights coming off it?
That was a basic idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it's just small.
Well, small is nice.
It's flat, though.
And tiny.
Yeah.
And I can't read it unless I push my nose up against it. And that's not the point, is it?
Well, I'll smudge the screen, won't it?
Yeah.
I think you're making too much of this.
Well, if they'd made too much of it, it would have been a good idea.
If you can. And that's how I was introduced was to... Because, like, I would see little things. I'm like, oh, Spinal Tap. And then out of nowhere, I keep hearing about this DVD. I'm like, I really want to see this movie. I want to watch it. So I went to like this video store and I turned in some DVDs to get credit and buy it. So that's how I was first introduced to this movie. And I still own it. Like I had the DVD. You know, we couldn't watch it because my freaking DVD or PlayStation broke. So HBO Max is the way to watch this if you can. When were you first introduced to this movie, Freddie?
Well, after watching Music for the Masses in 87, 88. I mean, this is when I saw this movie because I was like,
so you actually got to see it in the 80s.
So I got to see it in the 80s because I wanted to be in the band. So I any documentary, rockumentary or whatever, I just wanted to get my hands on and watch this. And yeah, I just, that's pretty much, you know, what happens. Like Spinal Tap was like, God, I want to be in the band. You got to watch this, dude. This is exactly, you know, what you may encounter in your venture into this career. And it's a brutal career, you guys. You got to be passionate about it. And of course, when you make it, you know, you're just a number to a major record company. I mean, it's a business. Everybody loves you when you're making cash and you're hot. But when you get to this point, like Spinal Tap, they're trying to keep the momentum going, the pressure. And not only that, the ego is within the band, I think. Oh. You know, it's killer. It destroys bands. I mean, look, it's even destroyed the Beatles, you know. So any band, that's what's amazing about being in a band. I think it's just like, you're like more than brothers. It's like marriage between dudes. And everything's so transparent where you get to even sit around and smell your he's a great writer, but you don't want to be smelling his feet or you know, or just things, just weird things that you're just like, dude, why do you chew your mouth? I'm pretty sure people hate things I do, you know, like.
Well,
you know.
Here, a girl is what broke them up.
Always, dude. She's the Yoko Ono of the band.
Yeah, she's the Yoko Ono. She comes on and she tries to change their style of what they wear on stage.
But it's so true. It's so true. You know, it's like I've had, you know, I'm not saying the girlfriend, you know, girlfriends are, but some of them step in and they want to change everything. And then the lead singer wants to be cool with everybody, like, oh man, I want to start shit. You know, hey, your girlfriend is butting in too much, man. And then the manager too is like, hey man. What is she, the road manager now? Your stage manager now? What's going on? And the boyfriend is just trying to be cool and try to, but it happens, you guys. And
yeah,
does.
And what's funny, because there's a scene where they're all eating dinner. They're at a diner. They're eating dinner. And she's trying to give them like a new costume. You're going to be playing like a lion and you're going to play like a cat or some like weird creatures, animals. And they're like, what the hell? And the manager's like, this is too expensive. And then that's when freaking, you know, Nigel, he's like, you know what? No. You know what? I got an idea. Let's do Stonehenge. Here, we'll do this. We'll do that. And then he writes 18 inches, in which you're supposed to be 18 feet. So when he gives it, he's like, oh, don't worry, hilarious. I got this covered. And then the lady, he's like, shows him the design. It's done. And he's like, oh, this is great. So this is going to look like 20 feet tall or whatever. He's like, no, this is it. He's like, what do you mean? And they have no idea. He's like, they're in concert playing, ready for this big ass thing to come down. And then they see the little thing, and the two midgets or dwarves are just like dancing around.
Yes, the small people are having fun with it. That was hilarious, dude.
I do not for one think that the problem was that the band was down. I think that the problem may have been that there was a Stonehenge monument on the stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf. All right? That tended to understate the hugeness of the object.
I really think you're just making a much too big a thing out of it.
Making a big thing out of it would have been a good idea.
that 18 inches is like, and then the manager too, he's talking to them after that. And he's like, well, didn't you, you're the manager. You're supposed to, didn't you think that 18 inches was too small? He says, hey man, I'm just doing what you guys want to do.
Yeah.
So I just take that information and I run with it. That's my job. I'm not here to change your creativity. You know, this is what you guys come up with. That's my job. So everybody's like, yeah, you know, passing the ball and saying, you know, one thing that reminded me one time, and it did, one time where I was working with Mary J. Blige, and she was doing a school event where she was promoting the album, No More Drama. That was the time I was working with her. So
yeah,
she asked her manager, go, hey, I want you guys to make me some basketballs, big basketballs, normal size basketballs.
Yeah.
Great. So then I got the order and said, hey man, don't screw this up. At the time I was working with another guy who's just started working. He was like Mr. Big Shot. So I had to share my work with him. So he had to put his 2 cents, which I did not trust. I mean, it's a cutthroat business. But anyways, I let him. I was like, great, I'm going to let him. So he's like, oh, I have a great vendor. He can make these balls and you know, make these basketballs on time. I said, are you sure? Yes. So this is for Mary J. Blige, you guys. So we make the order. We send them the artwork. And then we ship the balls out. As soon as they were done, these balls go out to this event that Mary J. Blige is attending. She gets there. It's only one box. She's like, wow, this box is so small. Where are the basketballs? Dude, they were miniature basketballs.
Oh, shit.
Mini. Do you know how embarrassing that was for her? She opened it up and the kids were laughing. They're like, oh. Then she ended up throwing the basketballs, like playing a joke with them like that. Dude, I got that phone call. The red telephone rang. When the red telephone rang, you're in deep shit. Dude. Everybody, I was that one knocked me down, but it wasn't my fault because I trusted this guy.
Oh shit, man,
dude, I couldn't.
See, that's why I'm glad I'm doing this with someone who's worked in.
That was embarrassing.
And but you related. That's the thing about this movie, man, is that Spinal Tap, it's become a term where like bands have something called the Spinal Tap moment. Like we're becoming this is such a Spinal Tap moment. I mean, hell, okay. So there's a scene where they're all in these pods, they're singing songs, and they all step out, and only, you know, freaking Derek Smalls, his doesn't open, and they're struggling, and he's playing the bass like, what the hell, like, get me out of here. And then it finally opens at the end of the song, and they're like, ah shit. So he tries to run back in and closes. That happened to you too during, I think it's like, what was it called, the Lemon Tour or something like that,
right?
And
they're always being doing huge,
yeah, they had a big ass lemon that they were inside, and it would come out, and they would come, it would open, and they would walk out, while one of the dates, it didn't open, and they were stuck in there, they could not come out, and it was such a, like, it was a Spinal Tap moment.
Wow.
Like it's crazy that, yeah, yeah, like this shit, like these things happen. That's why like bands, like they see this movie and they love it, but they also dread it, because it's like, shit, like we've gone through this stuff. Like there's one that I'll be, you know, sharing this, posting it, because I love the segment on I Love the 80s, the VH1 special, where they talk about this movie. And the guys from Quiet Riot, they mention how like in the movie they have an album called Shark Sandwich, and they got a review that literally said shit sandwich.
Yeah.
And the guys in Quiet Riot said like, holy hell, we had that experience, because we released an album called Condition Critical, and we only got a 2-word review called Condition Terminal. And they said like, fuck, like we hit a Spinal Tap moment. And it's just like, man. I'm telling you, people like other bands, like they, this is regarded, like, I don't know about artists today, but artists from back when and bands, like there's even, hell, Nine Inch Nails, I'll have to share this with you, Freddie, where they're just practicing on stage before a show, and someone brings down the Stonehenge, the same Stonehenge, and he's like, what the fuck? And then their buddies, like, they get on their knees and they're like dancing around it, and then he just starts laughing, and I'm like, dude, that's fucking badass. So it's like,
that's cool.
Like this holds near and dear to play, but it's also extremely, like, it's funny as hell. Like, I love that where when Marty DeBurgi, he's interviewing them and he's like, I notice you have a lot of male fans. Like, why do you have, like, why do you think that is? And they're like, oh, it's basically, he says, because they have big dicks that they make the girls scared and run away. And that's why there's guys, like, that's why there's so many guys, because most of the girls are afraid of their big dicks. Oh, in which God. You realize he doesn't have a big dick because he has a freaking cucumber in his pants, but they do close-ups of it. And some of the lyrics to this song, let me see. Well, I want to read the big bottom, because most of the songs are
by the way, I've never worn a cucumber. If you're wondering, people are wondering, does Freddy wear a cucumber? if you only see the tight pants I wear.
Oh man, it's all like the big bottom. It's all the bigger the cushion, the sweeter the pushing. That's what I said. The looser the waistband, the deeper the quicksand. Or so I've read. My baby fits me like a flesh tuxedo. I love to sink her with my pink torpedo.
And then dudes are rocking to that, dude. They're like, yeah. Pass the joint, dude. This is great lyrics, man. Hell yeah.
Oh, man. And then the other song, Sex Farm, that one too. He's like, working on a sex farm, trying to raise some hard love, getting out my pitchfork, poking your hay, scratching in your hen house, sniffing at your feed bag, slipping out your back door, leaving my spray.
Yep.
Oh man, I'm telling you, dude. Like, there's little things. Like one of the famous ones is the amps, where it's like, you see, this goes to 11. It's like he's like, okay.
Oh, I love that scene, dude. He's like why not just 10? No, but 11, you're louder. It's just more like, and you know what? Kind of like, yeah, that's kind of cool. I want to have an 11. I don't want to be at 10.
Like when you need that extra push, that extra kick, you put it to 11. He's like, why not make 10?
The numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board. Oh. 11, oh, 11,
and most of 11. And amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
11. The big one. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he just stays quiet.
Right.
These go to 11.
That cracks me up, dude. Oh, like, man. What? It's crazy. 11, dude. Fuck it. Not 10, 11.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that. Hey, man, crack it up to 11.
And then, like, when I love how he's like, Nigel, he's playing the piano. And you could tell he's actually playing it. Okay. And it's nice, melodic. Like, it just sounds so sweet. Like, man, this is a good song. Very much like he said, like Mozart and Bach. Like, he's playing it. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I call that song Lick My Love Pump.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh man. It's just stupid little things like that. When they first meet the limo driver, you don't get a lot of him. But
you know who that actor is too. The
limo driver?
I think the limo driver, he's a famous he's been in a lot of those mobster movies.
Yeah, I see. I know. See, he was young, because there's a lot of people in
and they talk
movie.
Like that, you know, like New York, you know? It's Bruno Kerb.
Bruno Kerb, let's see. I'm trying to find.
I hope that's, I'm saying it right.
Limo groupie? No.
Bruno Kirby?
Maybe. Tell me another one of your favorite scenes while I look for the guy.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, one of my favorite scenes was that when you get lost, because I recently, in one of my last shows, I got lost. And everybody was like, where in the hell is Freddy? I was like, I don't know, dude. Everything's black over here. I can't see. Give me a light guy. That one, dude.
Like, hey, you're all calling them. I don't know where I'm at. I'm lost.
Exactly. They bring the walkie-talkie. ¿Dónde está Freddy? Está el pendejo allá del que muy, muy, muy Depeche Mode. Este está perdido, güey. Yeah, so that one.
I'm going to take my time.
Yeah, dude. That, that, So many things, because I, you know, before COVID, I was touring, you guys. And I mean, when I went to Sinaloa, Sonora, that tour was just crazy too, because I played in, I was in actually playing at Cartel nightclubs that used to be owned by cartels, and I heard there was history there. Oh, this used to be so and so, or this used to be. And I was like, oh my god. So not that there are any cartels in this movie,
yeah. But
just like that, just things like that. Like,
oh yeah, and it is Bruno Kirby. It is Bruno Kirby. You're right. I remember him, because he was in City Slickers and shit.
Yeah, and he's talking to the director, and he's like, "So what do you think of these guys?" Oh man, it's a fad, man. Just look, man. It's
gonna disappear.
It's gonna disappear. They're done, and that's it, man.
See, but it's because he gets mad because the window's down, and they're in the back, and then she's the groupie, because she's labeled as limo groupie. She's back there reading a Sammy Davis Jr. book. He's like, "Are you reading Yes I Can?" She's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh well, I gotta tell you about this book. Like, you know, there's a part with Frank Sinatra. Yeah, this and that." And then you see Nigel like kind of right there in his head, like looking at him, and out of nowhere, as he's mid conversation, they just put the window up. Fuck. Oh, that's fucked up. Like, and I mean, it was funny, but I was like, god damn, that's fucked up.
You know what reminded me of, because look, I've been in a lot of bands. I've lost relationships with bands. Unfortunately, the music destroys friendships, unfortunately, you guys. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them might be able to be friends and all, because it's just so much ego. There's just so much, like, just all this creative power, and everybody wants to get their light on. I mean, their spotlight, you know? But the one thing is the relationship between the two main dudes, you know, they're like brothers, when they're asking him, you know, how do you feel about working with together and being creative? Well, yeah, sometimes we kill each other, where I just want to kill him and all that. But out of that, something beautiful comes out of that, because you still understand. You're like, no, man, let's lower down the ego. Let's focus on what we need to focus on that makes us work together, the collaboration between the band. And I think that's what the beauty about, you see Spinal Tap. Everybody's got a cool, interesting personality that brought these guys together and do what they do on stage with the lyrics, with the vision of their band. I mean, the unit, you know, the outfits, that's what makes a band. It's cool. It's like, look at Kiss. Look at those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys. And they're still number one, like, selling out.
Yeah, but see, they even had their issues with the band where, like, members were leaving and then they came back. I think 96 was the first time they...
Every band has like that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, one guy leaves and then comes back. You know, look at Depeche Mode, lost Alan Wilder. He hasn't returned. But, you know, there's some guys who will never return. You know,
yeah,
and that's an unfortunate part.
We get that in this where, because it's Nigel's having issues, you know, with the girlfriend.
Dave's,
yeah,
the girlfriend. She got you know,
she got too comfortable.
Yeah,
that's the thing. She got too comfortable with David's, you know, girlfriend. And then, like, David was kind of like, oh, this is my girl. So, of course, like,
he's trying to be cool.
He quit. So does Ian. Ian up and leaves too. They're like, fuck, we're gone. And they try to continue moving forward, but they can't. Hell, they end up having a show where it's literally a puppet show and Spinal Tap.
Exactly.
The puppet show has bigger billing than Spinal Tap.
And by the way, did you know that that location is Magic Mountain?
Yeah, that's Magic Mountain, dude.
I've been on that stage, bro. I remember seeing a show in the 80s, bro. I recognize that stage.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant you guys performed on that stage.
No, I did, a long time ago in the 90s, because they were having, but dude, that stage, man, wow. Even Kiss made their movie there at Magic Mountain.
It's like, and it's even sad when freaking when they're still trying, because almost every venue they're closing, they're like getting canceled, and they it end sucks. Up like any show, we just want to get any show.
That
and,
sucks, dude.
And she gets them, or like they get a show at a fucking naval base, and they're like, they don't even want this music. They want to dance, have a good time.
Dude, look at, they're all dressed in suits and all that. They're like, what the hell is this? And they're all walking away from the state, you know, from that's, you know. Yeah, you know, and then they're playing at festivals, you know, which festivals are cool, but I guess, you know, like a the festival they were playing at, they weren't having, it was just, you know, the people who go to amusement parks like, hey, let's go check this band out. I'm not going to pack it unless.
Yeah. And like, I was reading that freaking, like, there were actual bands that have like that comes from like actual bands who gotten stuck having to perform at like army bases or naval bases and shit like that. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, like this movie as a whole is funny. Like you'll laugh. Like the whole film, like there's, I guess like towards the very end, it gets a little too serious because it's the friction. They're breaking up. And you have to have that because it's like the real band. They break up and it's cool because they do come back together. So it's the only part that it's, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's the weaker part of the film because it's not as funny, where the most of the movie is funny.
Yeah, yeah. You're in a roller coaster ride and it came down. You're like, oh no, we're coming down. But it had to be a little serious because he came back. You know, yeah. He was there seeing the band. He's like, what are you doing here? I came to see the band. No matter what. See, I'm sorry, I can relate to that because I did live that. I left a band because things just stuff, you know, like I say, we're all just trying to make it and, you know, we just got tired of each other. But I still supported their music. Like, I mean, I still supported their, so I would show up. I showed up at, I remember I was at the Roxy. I showed up and it was so funny to feel like I was now out in the audience, not on stage with these guys.
Yeah.
So, but I still supported them no matter what her personality is, because that was just being creative stuff. But as far as the music, that was what I was there to support. And that's how I saw Nigel being there supporting, you know, their
collaboration. I like that part, that because he's off in the stage, he's off on the side and they're playing. And then at one point, you know, they look at each other, you know, cause they were childhood friends. They wrote songs together as kids, and that's when he looks over and he like calls him over, like, come on.
Of course.
And he goes out there, but it pisses the girlfriend off because you see her face and she's like not happy about it. And
Yoko Ono, dude.
And they decide to go to Japan because their hit Sex Farm
is it's a hit out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go out there, you know?
Exactly.
And it's like, it's good because it ends on a high note. And you also see Ian with this paddle. For some reason, he takes it everywhere. He just has it right there. And she's sitting there like looking up like I'm not in control anymore. And it's cool because it ends, it dips and it ends high, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good film. If you've never been in a band and you just want to have the humor that happens, that's, you know, there's one scene too where they're at a diner and he's like, hey man, what's up with the gum on your finger? He's like, oh, cause I'm going to eat it later. That's kind of gross. Like, you know, <Yeah. laughs> shit like that happens, man.
He's like, what, like, why do you do that? Yeah.
Like, I'm going to eat it later. He's like, damn, dude. Yeah, funny. But yeah, I mean, I had fun revisiting this movie. I mean, you got to check it out. It's fun. It's a, you know, it's a cult classic. They also came up with the return of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, they did. Right? Let me quickly look up
After this movie, they just ended up doing another, which I didn't really get to see that one. It was more of a concert film than what it is, like this film. So
see, that's the thing. They write the music, so they've actually released albums. Like, okay.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's become
like a real thing. But it is a real thing.
When MTV was actually fucking cool, when MTV was good, they did this one thing. It was a look back of the MTV Music Awards from the very first one the one that whatever year it was. It was the early 2000s at that time. So it was like looking back, and there was a moment where they had Spinal Tap come out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As you know, it was them. They're like, and they act like they are finally getting back together. Like they've done that. Hell, the Simpsons have an episode where Bart, in one of the early seasons, Bart goes to a Spinal Tap concert. And I remember there's a riot that happens because they end up going off stage because one of the inflatables deflates. So they just get off stage. So like, oh, whatever. So it causes like a riot. Spinal Tap has like, you know, It's been around, everywhere. But they have real albums. Like 92, they did an album called Break Like the Wind. Let's see. They had a 2-hour made for TV sequel. Yeah, The Return of Spinal Tap was a broadcast and released on home video to promote Break Like the Wind. It consisted mostly footage from an actual Spinal Tap concert at the Royal Albert Hall in the Stone, and the Stonehenge joke from the original movie is referenced, as the new large prop is instead too big to get into the venue. All right, that's funny.
That's funny. Finally, no, it's too big now.
Not too big, it can't get it in. That's hilarious. Yeah. They re- oh, 2009, they released an album and DVD called Back from the Dead.
I think this is a band, they become so famous because they always, I see they've always been doing reuniting albums or reuniting concerts, or it's like, hey, we're reuniting again. All right, see you guys later. And then 10 years go by and then, oh, we're reuniting again. And all right, that's what
happened. In 2018 was the last Spinal Tap related thing release was Harry Shearer, who plays Derek Smalls. He's the one that you're seeing in the back right there with the long handlebar mustache. He released an album called Smalls Change, Meditations on Aging. So it was a solo album by Derek Smalls. So that's the last time we got a Spinal Tap. But like I said, if you can get your hands on that DVD with the commentary, it's amazing. You got to check it out. This is one of the, like, it was a good way to end our 1984 series was with this one. Because, again, it was just... I mean,
you know what? And it's a good pick from our audience or listeners who enjoy the show. And thank you for that. That's cool. I didn't think I bought that one. That one just, but good choice.
Yeah. It's a film that I love. I was obviously introduced to it late, you know, in life, but it was still something that when I saw it, I was like, dude, this movie's a hit for me. Like it's funny. You know, my wife was excited to see it. She was hoping that one was going to win. And she's like, I really want to see this, because there is an episode of the Goldbergs, and the Goldbergs takes place in the 80s. And they do kind of like a Spinal Tap episode. And I pointed out to her, like, oh yeah, that's based on the movie. That's a real movie. You got to check it out, blah, blah, blah. And so she was excited and she loved it. She was laughing along with me. Like I was happy about that.
You know, these guys are all great actors. I mean, especially Michael John McKean. He's one of the, remember Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah. Yeah. Squiggy just passed away. I think last month.
Hello.
Yeah.
I still love it. Squeaky
yeah,
man.
He was in Short Circuit 2, and then that's why he was
great actor. He's a great actor. Better Call Saul. Yeah, great actor.
Conehead.
Humor and drama. So it's great to still have him around. Of course, you know, Penny Marshall passed away a few years ago. So
yeah. This movie is again. You gotta check it out. I don't know how much.
It's pretty good. Check it out. That's it. Yeah,
so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's our revisit of the week. It's been fun going on
Torch, gracias. Yes.
Trying to promote our newest album, Smell the Glove, in which we got lost backstage, and Freddie actually did get lost backstage.
That was funny. That was funny.
And he made some tiny basketballs for Mary J. Blige.
Embarrassing, but I think it's time.
And we hop into that DeLorean. Oh, yeah. And it was, I didn't want to stop you, but isn't it Mary J. Blige?
Yeah, I did. Mary J. Blige. What did I say?
Blige. You're like Blige. Mary J. Blige.
I was saying a British accent. Mary J. Blige.
I was like, is it? I'm like, I don't want to stop him. It's a funny story. But I think it's time we hop into that DeLorean and travel back to the future.
This has been a Brothers Bear Network production.